Welcome to this podcast from VCP 2014, the Vital Church Planting Conference. The conference is held in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, every year and brings together church planting leaders from across Canada. It is co-sponsored by the Anglican Diocese of Toronto and the Wycliffe College Institute of Evangelism, which is closely connected with Fresh Expressions Canada. We hope you enjoy this podcast. For more information on the conference and how you can register for the next Vital Church Planting Conference, please visit www.vitalchurchplanting.com.
If I could have your attention, so this is Church Where the Action Is. My name's Jonathan Massamy, and I'm a priest in the Diocese of Huron. And I've been in Brantford, Ontario, for 3.5 years. I was invited into this project that Grace Anglican started called Counterpoint. But in your brochure, it says, church happens while we're responding to the needs in the community after a natural disaster. That's not us. It's some of the things I'm going to talk about is church as an unnatural disaster. Things that happen, things that we do to reach people, but in fact, we end up hurting them. The question I like to have in your mind as you go through is not what are we going to do for people, but what are we doing to them? Okay, in our worship. So the first half of our discussion is going to be talking about presence and action. Okay, so when I talk about presence, it's going to be about how we connect to God through the worshiping community. And then how do we take this out into the front lines? What we've learned in worship, how do we connect it to the front lines? So what are we doing to people here, and how is that informing how we act out there? Right? And I know a lot of the process that has been discussed for the past couple of days was, we're out there, things happen, and then we give it form. And slowly how can I put this? Mission informs ecclesiology or the form of the church. The approach I'm gonna take is the form of the church informs, and the practices of the church inform our mission. So it's a different perspective. Okay, so Counterpoint is a congregation that started in 2007. I arrived in 2010. Now, if you look on our website, it says that Counterpoint was inspired by the Fresh Expression movement. Now, I came to believe that this was actually the inspiration. It wasn't this desire to, there was a desire to go out into the community. There was this desire to engage in mission. But when you are finding that your church attendance is dipping, you try anything you can. You'll buy anything you can off the shelf. You'll do everything and throw a lot of money at it, hoping that something sticks. That spaghetti understanding of ministry. Keep on throwing it against the wall until something sticks. Great. Let's go. Let's move with it. So when Counterpoint started, looking at the earlier documents, it was this understanding that we had a 5-year plan, that within 5 years we were going to go from this one side to that, right? So that we were going to be, within 5 years we were going to be at 300 people with average giving at about $1,000, and you could do the math and what does that mean. So what had happened was, it was a church that began around a boardroom table. Okay, so a group of people went out and said, this is what works, this is what we want to do, let's go around and see what's successful. Let's go to the churches that have the most cars in the parking lot and let's see what they do, and let's form this. I've actually coined a phrase with regards to that. It's called a Franken church. You take elements of what you think will work and you put it together, and oftentimes it's unrecognizable. You don't know what is happening. So misunderstanding, in the beginning, this is the very first newspaper article that went out about Counterpoint. So, an informal blue jean wearing, coffee carrying, no stained glass window kind of group at Counterpoint, a church where the emphasis will be on praise and worship, interaction, and God's grace. The services will be non-sacramental, which means communion and baptism won't be offered more than a few times a year. Evangelical style of worship, liberal in perspective, fill what is perceived as a local void. Okay? So this is some of those things to highlight, right? So this is an interview from the person that started Counterpoint, and this idea of, you know, it's praise and worship, informal. You know, when I got interviewed for the job, it was like, do you like wearing jeans? Yeah, I like wearing jeans. Like, okay, you're perfect. Come on in, lay back. You know, you have a beard, you're a little chubby, you look like Bruxy. Come on in, right? So that's the kind of thing that happened. And then this language of, you know, non-sacramental. So if someone's not coming to church, you don't even know what sacramental is, and you don't know what non-sacramental means. So there's Lord's Supper a couple times a year, and the odd baptism. And then evangelical style of worship with a liberal perspective. Right? So once again, our worship forms us. So it created almost a schizophrenic type of thing. One message was being presented in the music, and another message was being presented in the sermon, and then the liturgical format, the way the service flowed, was giving another message. So once again, it's not what we're doing for people. We have to continually ask, what are we doing to them? And my first walkabout in Counterpoint, I was just overwhelmed. I got the documents, and wow, this sounds great. Let's buy this house. And then walked in, and when you start opening the walls, there's, we have to deal with asbestos here and rewiring and that, and the job became more and more, and realizing what was happening. So it had this understanding that we're going to be a fresh take on church. So what I found out, and the pictures were, we had billboards around town with, pictures of families that don't even attend our church. Some guy, for some reason, holding a guitar. And we're hip, and we're young, and we're fresh, and we're new, and we're not like that other church. And that's what kind of bothers me, because when we begin our church with an ideology, when we say we're going to build it around this understanding, this idea, for example, we're going to be the Bible-believing church. And then that means the other churches are not Bible-believing. We're going to be the fresh church. Well, that means that the other churches are stale. So how you begin, right, the understanding that you have of church and what you're going to be, it's very dangerous to begin with an ideology. So when I walked into Counterpoint, and I'm going to put my cards on the table. I grew up as a Pentecostal. Okay? I was in youth groups and pastored youth groups with from 50 to 350 students. And we had high energy type of worship, bands, multiple people on staff. We never had to really worry about budget. It was all there. And I walked in my very first Sunday, Counterpoint. And everyone on stage, for some reason, was wearing the same golf shirt. Same color, logos, everything was clean, perfect. And I'm like, what is going on here? Week two, I said, lose it. Lose the golf shirts. And then I started sitting in the service and took in some of the music that was happening. And once again, evangelical style of music, lyrics were saying one thing, message was saying another. And I was sitting there, and this came to mind. Best before September 1987, because Counterpoint started September 2007. And as soon, I don't know, it sends sorry, forgive me if you love this song. When I hear Shine Jesus Shine, and then we pause and do the shivers. Because that was what contemporary music is. This is hip, this is new. And I'm like, this is the Pentecostal church 20 years ago. That's what I said. Now, and I was captivated by this quote, Dallas Willard. Goes, when do we get to the point at which we accept smaller numbers of intensely devoted people rather than furiously investing in filling auditoriums and stadiums with massive numbers of lukewarm Christians that Jesus promised to spew from his mouth? And that's what I was finding. You know, I went there, it was already up and running for 3 years. There were those that had somewhat of a church memory that were part of the traditional setting, came back, wanted to try something. They were at one time, to use the Fresh Expressions terminology, de-churched. Then there were those with no church memory whatsoever, and they were there. And I was, once again, that question, what are we doing to them? And some were there for 3-4 years, and they weren't reading their Bible, they weren't praying, they weren't giving, they weren't serving. And I remember going up to one person, would you like to help with Sunday school? And she said, no. At this time we had two teachers, about just over 30 kids, right? And these two teachers are getting burnt out. And I went up to the person, and she had been hurt from another church, but she's been in Counterpoint for a couple of years. I said, would you like to help? No, I was at another church and I got burnt out, so I'm just not going to. And I said to her, well, how long have you been here? 3 years. I go, fine. Now, I go, hopefully you take this, all right? And I said, I don't want you to come here. You were at one church the victim, and now you're the perpetrator. Go, you're now burning out another group of people because you're not willing to participate in this community. And she didn't take that well for some reason. I don't know why. So it was this understanding, putting it and challenge her to get part and be part of the life of the church. But what the worship was doing to her for the last 3 years was keeping her as a spectator. You had the band on stage, you had her there, she listened to the message, came, send your kids off to Sunday school, I get to sip a coffee, I get to wear my jeans, things are comfortable, I don't need to get involved. So then I started focusing on two passages. I'm like, these are two pillars in which we're going to work from. Because to be honest, I went into that position. I'm like, I don't know what the hell I'm doing. I go, all these things are happening. People are coming to this service, and I don't really know what to do with them. How do we direct this? How do we turn this boat toward mission? And two things, Great Commission. Go into all the world, and the great commandment to love your neighbor as yourself. So this is the two passages I held and tried to form a community around. Then we started asking ourselves two questions. So how do we make disciples, and how do we love God and love neighbor? Okay, so how do we form people? And how do we release them into our neighborhoods for mission? So this idea of presence in action and then front lines in action. Then we use the message, and we're really hammering away at this. The word became flesh and blood and moved into the neighborhood, right? And we began to see and figure out ways of how that was going to happen. Then we started I don't like to use the term rebranding, because if you remember the first logo I put up, it said nothing. Like, what's Counterpoint? What does that mean? And I found myself like 10 minutes trying to figure out, like, explaining what a Counterpoint was, and then and I would lose people, and nothing was really identifiably Christian in the logo. So a group of us got together, got some help from a friend that's a graphic designer, and we came up with this, But something that was very central was the love God, and once again, that contextual, love Brantford. And that's where we started, and we didn't know what that was going to look like. We're like, okay, this is what God's calling us to do. It's very simple in these verses. So how do we live that out? A couple of years ago, there was this speaker, David Mail. I'm not sure if anyone was here for that. I just love the way he did this, and we see various incarnations coming out of England, but the idea of the love, relate, create, right? There's this process. How do you begin to love those who are around? How do we begin to love our neighborhoods? How do we begin to love those within our gathering? Then through that relational aspect, we say, how do we relate to them? What are things? And that's where the needs and you see the passions. And then we create. But what I see happening is this, and this is once again from David Mail, the create, relate, and love. And this is very much that attractional model. Let's create something. Let's do it. And then let's pray to God it relates. Oh, and once all these people come and start paying our bills, then we'll love them. That's great. So, throughout this process, once again, what are we doing to people? Is we began to emphasize spiritual practices and prayer and making that central to who we are. So this is our prayers around the cross, and that's been developed and is central to our worship now at Counterpoint, where we invite people to come and pray and kneel and spend time around the cross. And we intentionally set that time aside. Two of my favorite authors, Stanley Hauerwas and Will Willimon, said, "We would like a church that again asserts that God, not nations, rules the world, that the boundaries of God's kingdom transcend those of Caesar, and that the main political task of the church is the formation of people who see clearly the cost of discipleship and are willing to pay the price." So the main task of the church is formation. But formation for mission. Right? Because we can get into that. We're going to form. We're going to have all the Bible studies, but there's no outlet. I think we need to hold those two in tension. And the other thing, and my good friend Joe, who's the speaker, he has a documentary, One Size Fits All, and he mentioned last night, out of the 25 churches that he did this documentary, Fresh Expression style, I believe he did it about 8 years ago, there's only two left in existence out of the 25. And a lot of that was, let's do, so let's go out there, let's do something, let's draw people in, and what tends to happen is people get burnt out because they're not nourished, they're not formed by worship and the community of faith. Okay, so it's great to be out there and seeing what God's doing, but we need to be nourished first. So this is one of our baptismal services, and once again, the cruciform understanding that we're called to a life of, I'll get out of the way, we're called to a life of service and sacrifice, and that needs to be done in community. Once again, this is Hauerwas. He says, "The first task of the church is not to make the world more just, but to make the world the world." Now, he's making that distinction. The church needs to be the church, and the world needs to be the world. Okay, and I'm going to expand a bit on that as well. But that understanding, just making the world more just. And I find sometimes within that seeking justice, the impetus for that can be the desire to be relevant. Let's do something that really matters. You know, and we seek that. But what Hauerwas is calling us to be, he goes, no, first be the church. embody that justice, recognize that justice, and then you go live it out. So when you go out, you recognize what the world is. And the biblical understanding of world is that which is opposed to God, right? He's not talking about, you know, hate the world. No, don't hate creation, but recognize the world, the forces in our context that are opposed to God. A great thinker, love his stuff, Leslie Newbegin. And I just summarized in 3 points some of his thought. He says, the church is a sign, a foretaste, and an instrument of the kingdom. So as a sign, our intention is we point people to the kingdom, we point people to God and to Christ. And then when people interact with us, we're a foretaste. We get to, people, by interacting with the church, by interacting with us as Christians, they get a taste of God's future, of peace, joy, love. And then God invites us as the church to be instruments. How do we point? How do we give people a taste? How do we draw people toward the kingdom? Now, it's an illustration I like to use. My grandmother used to do a lot of baking. How many like to bake? How many like to taste the batter and lick the spoon? Come on, be honest, honestly. So I like to see the church as the spoon. Hey guys, here's the batter that God's making. Have a lick. The cake's about to be, is baking. But here's a little taste of what you're in store for. So we're the spoon of the kingdom. And this is my prof, David Fitch, and I'm going to give a plug on two of his books, Prodigal Christianity and The Great Giveaway. Influential. It actually revolutionized the way I think of church, and I'm currently actually studying with him at Northern Seminary. And he says this, the church must begin by being the church and working out what Christ's justice is in the church before we can offer it to the world or call into account the forms of justice in the world. Be that taste of God's future. Be that alternative structure. Scott McKnight speaks about being God's dream society. The church, live out God's intention, live out God's dream in your midst. I like to use this example as well. The church is the petri dish, creating this kingdom culture. Test, do, something grows and then goes out into the world. So this counterculture and the centrality of my understanding for mission is Eucharist, right? I believe the life of Christ is encapsulated within this meal. Jesus says, remember me in this way. You know, Jesus' teachings are important, but I think there's something vital about the Eucharist. I never hear Jesus saying, hey, Peter, this is a good line, write this down. He says, no, this is how you remember me. This is my life. It encapsulates Jesus' ministry. Something that we tried doing was something called bread and breakfast. So we invited people to come and have the Eucharist together, and then following that, we broke out into breakfast. So this extension of the Lord's table. And this is, long story short, we decided to move our, once again, missional listening and adapting and learning as we're going. We figured out a good bulk of our congregation, average age is about 35 with children, half of our congregation's children. And we said, you know, 10 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday, and some people were working shifts. We had single moms in the congregation. We're finding it as a struggle to come. So as a team, we said, what's something that's missing? What's something that you miss when you were a kid? And someone said, we really miss Sunday dinner with family. So this started this process, and we started meeting at 3, and the reason why I did 3:33, right, was because something some people remember and advertising stuff. So we meet at 3:33 in the afternoon. We have our time of worship together, discussion, and then we break out into a meal, a potluck meal. Now, once again, what are we doing to people? So everyone that came had to bring something. That was an indication that we all have gifts to give. And our church runs a meal program, and so feeds about 250 people. And people, the first couple of weeks that we moved and started having the potluck, people caught wind that there's food. And what was happening was there was this crowd of people at the side of the door. They'd send in a runner. Okay, service is done, and a bunch of people just run in, eat all the food, and leave, right? So we're like, well, what do we have to put into place here? So I had a heart-to-heart conversation with people, and I said, this meal is how we give back to God, and this is how we share with other people. And we need you to bring something. I go, I don't care if it's a can of pop or chips or whatever, you need to. Well, some people didn't come back, obviously. But there was this little group of guys, they brought a big bag of chips. And it was funny because they all brought it in holding it together. It's like, this is our offering. But they were part of it. They participated in what was happening. And we were calling them and calling out their gifts and saying, you know what, you have something to give. You have something to give to God.
The
idea of, and I'm going to expand on this, the idea of one table, a new and better world begins at one table. This understanding that we learn how to be in peace with one another, we learn how to interact, we learn how to share, and it begins there. And obviously, one table, the Lord's table. But we started it another way. We started having potlucks, and then we're evolving toward this idea of Eucharist. But I've told people we began with almost like a proto-Eucharist. People were eating and enjoying each other's company, and we began to define that by saying, well, this is God at work, and then slowly we're developing this idea of Eucharist for people. And I'm doing a teaching series on that at Counterpoint. So we're looking at, in 2 weeks, actually having Eucharist twice a month, so first and second Sunday. And then an idea that someone had was, well, why don't we have a kitchen party and have a banquet table down the center of the whole hall? And let us reenact that parable of the wedding banquet once a month. So we extend the Lord's table by inviting people to that and to come and eat and be part of this Eucharistically formed community. Then, at the end of the month, we do Christianity 101. So once people have been invited to the table, then we point them to maybe some Christian education and slowly bringing them into that Eucharistic life in the and partaking of the Lord's Supper. So this is something that is, so worship shapes our ministry. Worship shapes our mission. Worship informs our mission. Through worship, we have this understanding of God's presence. We come to recognize God's presence. And then we're able to, because of that taste of God, we're able then to go into the world and recognize God's presence in the world because we have tasted of it in worship. So one thing that we did in Counterpoint a couple years ago, we had something called the Share Fair. And a bunch of us has said, you know, we have a lot of crap in our houses and lives. Let's declutter. Let's live simply. So we went around with a pickup, different people's homes in our church, those in the community, and people began to donate and get rid of their stuff and declutter. And this one Saturday, we put it all on the lawn and said, free. take it. And it wasn't like crappy stuff. It was like television sets and beds and children's clothes and good stuff that still worked. And through that, we just put it out. There were 9 migrant workers that rode by with their bikes. They pulled up. What's happening here? I go, take what you need. Like, are you serious? And they took clothes, and one guy, there was a DVD player there and TV, and they're just loading up. Then an immigrant family came by and said, oh, how much? No, it's free. Just take it. Well, we furnished their new apartment with the bed and different things like that. Then this is the weirdest one, that a missionary came by. Oh, I'm just here to collect. Like, we need to purchase some children's clothing because I'm going to Cuba. Fill up your luggages, man. It's free. And out of that, our abundance and decluttering, we're able to do ministry. And that simplicity of living, that simplicity of Christ's presence in bread and wine, began to form our lives, saying, you know what? We're nourished at the table. We're nourished through these relationships. We don't need all these things in our lives to feel good about ourselves. Let's just get rid of it. And we got rid of it, and we gave it away, and that's what was happening. People were ministered to, and connections were made. And people still ask me, when are you doing that again? You know, there were some people that were greedy that came by and said, this is free, and they started loading up their trucks, and I probably will see their stuff at other garage sales. But those little stories of those that we interacted with. And then my son Sam was selling lemonade, right? Cute kid. People were like, and he raised money that was given to our meal program. So it was this understanding of. So this is my very first time doing the mind map. We're gonna discuss some of these topics. So first, we're gonna begin with presence and action. Okay, and this is where we're gonna get your feedback. So just take a minute, and maybe just turn to your neighbor, and discuss ways that you've encountered God's presence in worship, and what ways can these encounters inform a particular action? Is that clear? So how have you related with God in worship, and what can that do in terms of an action? So what was a particular action, right? So take a minute, and we'll go through that. And now. All right, let's get some of these on the board. It's great to hear some conversation. Would anyone like to go first? Okay, there are no church planners here. You could all go. We'd like to step out first and so presence in action. What's something within the worship, the action of worship, that you felt God's presence? Else?
My experience in the Eucharist shifted.
Okay.
Otherwise, you know, I'd always be sort of picking the memorial, like putting the name on it, and then it was, once I, my experience was real presence of Christ, and then that actually gave the meaning of the body of Christ something, that then I feel like it wasn't empty anymore, and I was the body of Christ, and everyone okay. Around me was the body of Christ, and then I felt compelled to actually. Okay, anyone else? Okay, so I took what you said, so this idea of this community breaking out into inclusion, inviting someone, and the impetus for that was inviting that person into the story. Okay, anyone else?
Yep. So this is dealing with Eucharist again, but Right.
Okay. Being known by, okay. So
say more about that.
What aspects of self can be known by God in worship? Okay, so known by God. So God knows something about you. So my next question would be, what does the worship tell you about yourself? And I get to put that out for everyone. You know, worship is informing your story, your narrative. So what is this telling you about yourself? Okay, because we all bring, something I learned. I had to, first 5 years of my marriage, we moved 4 times. And you don't realize how much crap you have until you move. And worship, I believe, is this movement. Right? We come out of where we were and we enter into a different space. And then we come before God and we realize, wow, look how much crap I have. I don't remember that box. Right? So what are some things in worship that can tell us a little bit about ourselves? Yes?
When we were discussing, I brought up that sermon, the message that is brought, can often speak to you as an answered prayer or answered question you might have, or even the other things that are on your plate in your life, or the people in your life, that God can speak to you through the message.
So that message for you, directed to you. Okay. Anyone else? What can our worship tell us about ourselves?
Going back to the ritual mats that we share with people, mm-hmm. some of them are strangers. I think in a big city, the anonymity that we sort of treasure is a kind of protecting ourselves against other people that we don't know. And it's a kind of a negative relationship. And so the ritual dance is a way of reshaping our relationships with strangers.
Right. Well, yes. Too much bacon. Yes.
In the Anglican tradition, our liturgy is wrapped with things that the worship tells us. I mean, the way it's formed, the shape of it, and even just the words tell the story again and again, depending on which of the prayers we use, of God reaching out to us. So
okay.
Style and form of music.
I could ask you also for who we are. It's not just who I am as an individual, but it's also who we are as not just a people, but as a human race. Because God's love isn't just centered on us or even just Christians.
Anything else? Okay, so this is kind of what we, I highlighted main things, right? So the emphasis of community, right? The being with others, connecting with the strangers, the sense of peace, calm, renewal within that context. The sense of being included within community. Part of that experience is music. What informs our community for many was the Eucharist, where we become the body of Christ who is sent as a community and as individuals. Also, through the Eucharist, we have this connection with God and others, and God reaches down to us and we reach to God, whereby we are known and we say, who am I? We come to this understanding of self within the worship and then who we are as the people. And through story, we see the truth-telling. God's narrative becomes part of who we are, informs us. And this is done through sermon, some people said, in other ways, in hearing the word. So what, through our discussion, we have some of the essential marks of the church. So if we call this story or word, okay, so word, sacrament, community. Okay, through our discussion, we recognize that. There's this form inherent in that. And when we have these discussions, I would say if we begin to put some of our community values and where we sense God's presence in worship, I would say that more than often, the marks of the church will begin to come forward. Now, the question is, you have all this stuff now, okay? Now, how do we make believe? So, this is the Petri dish. All this is happening. We've created this kingdom culture. Now, how do we take that and infect the world? The front lines. What are some of the things we're going to encounter? And what actions can we take based on what we know from worship? So take a couple of minutes and discuss that. So what are the front lines that you're encountering? Where's your mission field? And what sort of actions can be done based on what you know of God's presence in worship? And take a couple of minutes. All right, great discussion. Let's put some things on the board. So we begin with front lines. I'd like to hear a bit of your stories. Where do you find yourselves? Maybe give an example of some of the challenges that you're seeing within your neighborhoods, within your context. So a frontline story. So that's reading your context. There's condos going up. And then if we had another board, condos, and what does that mean? What does condo living look like, right? Anyone else? Yes?
We have some discussion that it's not always clear what the frontline is.
Okay, so it's unclear for frontline. Okay.
But the church and the community, they have such the demographic of the church and the demographic of the community in which it's now located.
Okay. So unclear. Yes?
I'm going to talk about physical because our biggest challenge in our marriage is access.
Access. Okay.
I mean, you know, if it was built today, they'd have all the access in the world, but it's 187 years old, it doesn't have very much access.
Okay. All right.
Or none.
All right. Anyone else? Okay, so work. All right. Yes?
I guess two things. One did come up in the conversation of work, but as we were talking, one of you said the importance of knowing your neighbor, who your neighbor is, because often we don't. Mm-hmm. And after we wrapped up our conversation, I looked at the exciting. The reason I saw that is because they talked about how you might have worshipped in the church, that was your neighborhood way back when, but now you live somewhere else, you drive into the neighborhood, worship, and then leave again. Mm-hmm. And so that, and the people in the neighborhood just see people descending on Sunday morning and leaving again. And so it strikes me that that would be one of the challenges that you see is recognizing that that place of worship, how the neighborhood is changing for the neighbors. The other thing that struck me is sometimes we've reached the front line and not realized it. John and I were at St. John's Newfoundland in early November, giving a workshop, and there was a guy who was struggling with the question of open table.
Just 1 second. I put overseas. We're talking front lines. It's like the battle somewhere else, right? Over. When you're talking about someone comes, people come in from the church worship and then take off, right? It's just like this overseas. You're going, you're planted, you're not really, it's not really your home. You do your thing and then you leave. So that's why I put that up. So,
oh,
sorry.
Yeah. The other one that strikes me is that sometimes people are already engaged in the front lines and don't realize it.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
struggle with the question of open table because they were, the Eucharist was an important question to them. John Phillips said it, I think that's quite right. And so it was like, well, if people are going to really encounter Christ and encounter the message, maybe we should have everybody coming to the Eucharistic table. And one of the things that jumps to head until we recognized it for them, and then they started to think about it, is because they were situated right between the university and one of the poorest areas
Yes.
Fear of Jesus. Liberalism is a loaded term. I'm not going to ask you to define it. Well, I will.
You don't want to define it? Or do... Okay, well, we could talk about it after. I'm not going to put you on the spot. You can Google it. Yeah. Yes.
This sort of is something that came up, particularly for me, is sort of that I've seen a lot of. It's sort of some of the deeper rules of people. It's really easy sometimes to feed people and to do other sort of physical things, but to really see grief or trauma in a person's life that people are really struggling with. It's really hard to see those sorts of things and to minister to those.
Okay. The time here, a couple more. Just one more comment. Anyone have another example of front lines, or can we move on? I think that's enough to work with in 3 minutes. Okay, so just I'm going to throw out some of my thoughts as well, especially to the notion of open table that, and I've heard you speak before. You say we are the open table. We go out and we're out in the community and we're doing, and that is in a sense unknowingly connecting to the Lord's table and helping people make that connection. Now, something I refer to it as is a proto-Eucharist, right? So people are getting a taste of God's presence within the community of faith, of the faithful, and then slowly begin to lead people to the Lord's table. Now, something that I've started to emphasize as well is we always emphasize table. Table, table, Jesus ate with everyone and things. And what we need to learn is Jesus was an inclusive eater. And many of the feasts that he had attended, he was not the host. He entered into people's contexts, right? So how are we as the community inclusive eaters? How are we being welcomed into people's lives, right? We always want to do come. We're the hosts. We're the nice people. But where do we go? Like, even Jesus sends out his disciples in twos. Who's going to welcome you? Who's going to bring you to their table so you can discuss and share a bit of the good news? That's one thing. The second is we forget that the Eucharist and the Lord's table is also altar and covenant. And if we look in Old Testament, covenant is an agreement. It's an entering into something. It is something that's demanded or required of two parties. So when we receive of the Eucharist, we're not just, hey, this is the Lord's table, he loves everyone, let's come. No, it's a covenant which we're being called into. He's saying, if you come and eat this table, there are some requirements from you. And we look in Corinthians, Paul, you know, assess yourself. Look at your lives. How is God calling you to live? And can you enter into this covenant? Can you live this life that God is calling us into? And I think we lose that, right? We say, yeah, we need to invite everyone, bring everyone in, come, wear jeans, drink coffee, great. But no, it's a key aspect to say, come and be part of something. Get formed. Come and know yourself. Begin to truth tell about who you are. Start to form your story in light of God's story. Be people that include. Allow your relationships to be formative. Invite the stranger. Be a place where there's peace, calm, and renewal. Learn to be the body of Christ. Enter into this covenant together, and then you are sent out into the front lines where there's disconnect, where there are people don't have access to, where there's condos, which could be a symbol of individualism. You go into into a place that's unclear. We go overseas. We're now disconnected from our communities. We go into places of work. There's the commuter idea that we're mobile and we don't really place roots anywhere. The idea of family. And I would say there's also a disconnect between us and family as well, even around our meals. And there are those that are wounded. There are those, I'll just say, fear of Jesus, that are scared of what they've seen of the church, because they look at us, and if we are to be this sign, foretaste, and instrument, are they seeing that? Are we pointing people to Jesus? As a foretaste, when people taste our relationships and how we interact with each other, do they want to spit us out of their mouth? Man, I've been at some vestries. I'm like, if I wasn't the priest here, I wouldn't come back. But, and just a quick story with this regard. A friend of mine told me of a church he worked at. And they raised tons and tons and tons of money for orphans in Africa. They fed them breakfast, lunch, dinner for 250 orphans daily. These wonderful white people helping some poor African kids overseas. They would have these big parties, $150 tickets, which excluded much of the congregation. My friend told me of a boy with Down syndrome who came through community living and didn't know that he had to have a ticket and walked in and sat down and started eating expensive food. The host of this banquet escorts him out. Is that a foretaste? How is our worship including us or forming us? What is our understanding? There was that disconnect. We're doing this, but people aren't tasting us. We weren't being this petri dish. There wasn't that culture being created of welcome. It was easy to send money overseas because we didn't have to get dirty. So the essential part of connecting that worship, and maybe this is some homework for you. Here are things that are happening in your community. This is your front lines. So what are some things that you can begin to translate? Like, how can we begin to live as people that are formed? How can we be this Eucharistic people? How can we be the body of Christ within our context? And if John Bowen gave me 2 hours, I would have said, let's go back. Yes, we have essential practices that help us to live, but how is our context now calling us to live out those essential practices? How are we to be in community when this is happening? How are we to celebrate the Eucharist that will invite people into a new way, a new covenant? How can we tell the story where it becomes intelligible to people that don't know the story, that are wounded, that fear Jesus, that are disconnected? How can we get people that are unclear and don't feel that they have access to things, how can we get them to be known and begin to tell the truth about their lives and where they are? So there's that give and take. So this is my last word on this, and then I could open up for 2 minutes for comments. The danger, and this is someone that grew up in a tradition every church has liturgy. Either you have good liturgy or bad liturgy. That's what I learned. We always had form. But what grieved me when I entered into the Anglican Church was that when we did fresh expressions, we began to strip everything. We made it unrecognizable. And we didn't keep one ear to the tradition. we talk about fresh and new and the Spirit's at work in the new things, but we forget that the Spirit was the one that was working in the past. We think that the Spirit's at work when there's new, creative, and there's this chaotic understanding and mystery and doing, and we forget that it was the Spirit that brought form and order and purpose in creation. So it's I believe liturgy is a work of the Spirit. So listen to the past, look to the future and say, God, what were you doing then? What was essential to those that have gone before me? And how can I bring that in the present? How does that inform me in my understanding of mission? Now, what does my mission field tell me about how I'm to live out those practices? And there are certain things that you will drop. And there are those things that you do add that are very important. So for a quick example, counterpoint. There were people, like I'm 35, there was a group of people that were into, get this, my age, Renaissance music. And that period. And they said, we want to start a choir. Came to me, we want to start a choir. And they were singing songs that I had no idea, but it was beautiful music. Then they came to me, we want to do a Renaissance Christmas. So you know what we did as counterpoint? The Fresh Expression. We had our Christmas Eve service at Mohawk Chapel using the BCP with a group of people singing Renaissance hymns in Christmas music, and the place was packed. We took part of our tradition and applied it to people. So that was what was happening in the front lines. And I looked into what I had. I'm like, hey, I have some resources here. Let's start doing something. And it was great. And this year we did something similar. And people are like, what are we doing next year? People are already thinking. And this little choir is growing. And now we have a children's choir. The kids of these members came, and then the kids want to sing. Now the children's choir. So it's just, and it wasn't fresh, new, or hip. They weren't all wearing the same shirt. But so be it. Okay, so any comments, final questions, and then we'll pray. Anything? I'm good if you don't. I don't get hurt. Would someone like to pray? It's a formative act. Thank you. Can you? Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
We hope you enjoy this podcast. For more information on the conference and how you can register for the next Vital Church Planting Conference, please visit www.vitalchurchplanting.com.